nation.
Blog Talk Radio.
Understand the behavior.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. We have our super, super host for the last 5 weeks, Monica Patrick Lewis, with us today. Monica, how are you doing today?
I am so great today because Reverend Pinckney, the man is back, the revolutionary leader of this new age fight that we're in, and it has just been an honor and a privilege to keep that seat warm for you until this great day when you return.
Well, Monica, I got to confess, you know, I had a few people say, well, they'd rather have Monica Lewis Patrick than have Reverend Pinckney on the show. I was totally shocked to hear that. I grabbed my heart and said, this is the big one. But they were saying you was doing a magnificent job. Not just a good job. You was doing a magnificent job. And I tell you the truth, I am so proud of you. I don't even know what to tell you. Actually, you're my hero because I know your work, you know, and just to be around you was a thrill. And I'm excited today that, you know, that you and I now will be doing this show together. And then we're going to have a spinoff where you're going to have your very own show. So I tell you one thing, Monica, I cannot be mad. But I tell you one thing, we had a week this week that nobody would believe. We had a guy to come down here from the Justice Department to just for my hearing and to sit in on some of the things that I have been saying all these years about Barron County Courthouse.
Yes, sir.
He sat in, and he listened, and when the judge made his ruling, he said he could not believe that a man who wears a robe could be that naive, or whatever. He didn't want to use the word racist. Which, you know, sometimes when you're working in Washington D.C., they don't like to use that term because remember, racism doesn't exist anymore. And he said, I could not believe what that man said. He stepped there out of his mouth and gave his reason for binding me over for trial. He said it was the most ridiculous reason that he have ever heard from a judge. He said when the prosecutor didn't say nothing, he said he believed that they had been communicating all along. He said, but I'm interested in his report, see how he's going to do his report in reference to Barron County. But anyway, the good news, they ruled that for me not to be on the computer was unconstitutional. And three, they took me off of house arrest. Four, they bond me over the trial with no evidence. But I'm in Barron County. You don't need evidence. Just like the judge said, I don't need evidence to bond you over for trial. He said, I could do it because if I think that you did it. And he said, I think Reverend Pinckney did this. And so that's his reason for bounding me over for trial. A judge making a statement like that, Monica, I tell you, it does not make any sense. But I tell you one thing, we're still going to beat him down. Because that's we have to do. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a monster here, and we're going to show them what we're capable of doing. But, Monica, I'm excited. I'm excited to be back. I'm excited just to be alongside of you. And also, you have a few issues up there in Detroit that you might want to talk about.
Reverend Bingley, we have some huge issues here in Detroit. We have a situation right now where you've got 120,000 households that are going to be cut off from water. And basically this is a strategic attack to be able to force people out of their homes because, as you know, what has happened there in Benton Harbor, which was the testing ground for a lot of these things, is that once you are able to cut a person off from water, then the home can be condemned. And so we believe that this is a fast-track way of actually putting gentrification on steroids. And what I've been saying everywhere I go is I charge genocide because if you don't have access to water, you can't take your medicine, you can't make your baby's formula, you can't bathe, so that becomes a health possible health risk. And so it really is a very dangerous precedent for us to be setting anywhere in this country to deny people access to water. Water is a basic human right. And you look at very large corporations like what is happening there in Benton Harbor with Whirlpool and them using corporatization as a way to privatize and extract control of the people, the citizens of Detroit have actually invested and paid and sustained the water system here, and we provide water to about 4.3 million Michiganders. Half of the state of Michigan we provide water to, and we provide it to them at a wholesale, and we pay retail. So Detroiters are actually on the hook for millions and millions of bonds. Our water system has been valued at $20 billion. You've got corporate entities like Mike Ilitch, which owns the Detroit Tigers. He also is Mr. Little Caesars. He owns the Red Wings. He is actually owing the city over $85,000 in unpaid water bills. But then you have the emergency manager that turned around and gave him blocks and blocks of Detroit property for a dollar. You've got the VA hospital that owes a $181 water bill. You've got a golf course here in the city that owes a $422,000 water bill. You've got Ford Field that owes a $65,000 water bill. But you would cut off poor people and people that have been disenfranchised and kicked out of the process. You would deny them access to water if they have a bill of $150. Now, you tell me what in that process is righteous, fair, or just. I say there's not an ounce of righteousness or justice in that.
And you, so you know what, thing, Monica, you hit the nail right on the head, because they did the same identical thing here in the city of Benton Harbor, and nobody said nothing. Whirlpool was getting free water. They stole $172,000 worth of water. They had spliced into our water supply. And was watering the golf course free. And I tell you, and what happened was, this is how they got caught: the pipe busted.
Yes, sir.
And when the pipe busted, the guy came out and told them the reason why it busted is somebody had spliced into your water supply, and we found out it was Whirlpool and his Harbor Shores. And I tell you, these corporations are something else. I say to myself, do we really need them? You know? Do we really need them? All they're doing is just, what they're doing to the people is so remarkable, and we're letting them go. We have to feed ourselves. We think without these corporations, we can't live. But we got to find other means, because what they're doing, they're sucking the life out of our communities. Detroit, think about the Detroit Red Wings and the Detroit Tigers. I bet you they've been stealing water for a very, very long time.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it even gets worse, Reverend Pinckney. We've got an activist here on the ground by the name of Charity Hicks, who has gone all around the world fighting for water and people's human right to access water. She went on her block because they were cutting off her water and eight of her neighbor's water to just inform her neighbor that they were getting ready to cut her water off, because the neighbor had six children in the home and a newborn baby. And when she attempted to do that, the person that was cutting off the water, the contractor for the city, used the back of his car to actually knock her down. She cut her foot, and then she called the police for assistance, and the police arrested her and took her to jail and held her for 48 hours without any charges. And she's a severe diabetic, so her health was at risk. And then we were able to get her out and get her home. And so she went to New York over a week ago to be able to present testimony about what's happening here in Detroit. And very, very mysteriously, an accident supposedly occurred where a car came up on a sidewalk in New York City and hit her. No one else, just her. And so now she's in a New York hospital in critical condition with an induced coma because she has severe brain damage. And so I told everybody, anyone that would listen to me, that that was an assassination attempt, because she would dare to speak out against the corporatizing of water. And you have a bill right now in Congress where they're considering privatizing water all across the country. So this is a very, very dangerous moment we're in.
Yeah, but it's, you know what? The people, what is it going to take for the people to rise up and say enough is enough? What is it going to take? Usually when things doesn't affect others, people don't do anything. But I'm telling you, it's coming to your door right now. They're knocking on your door right now. See, once they control the water, then they're going to try to control the air. Yes, you see, that's where they're going with this. Next thing they're going to try to do is control the air. If you go outside, you're going to have to put a quarter in the box.
Yes, sir. Yes,
that's
sir.
Right. You go, and then eventually it's going to come to the stage where you can't afford to buy air.
That's
so
right.
It's coming there, Monica. We people here in Michigan, everybody's there with the people in Michigan, y'all got an emergency, man, y'all have financial problems. Well, no, they created these financial problems so we can have financial problems. That's what people
That's
do
right.
not know, Monica.
That's right.
I tell you. You know, I'm still waiting to see Cindy on here. I have not located her as of yet.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm hoping she will tune in. I was so excited to communicate with her on this past week and share your story about what was happening here. And she was sharing some similar things that are going on in California. For many that are on the line, one of our guests we hope to have on today is Cindy Sheehan. And for those of you, I know many of our brilliant people that tune in to the Pinkney Show, already know who she is. She's a legendary figure. She's a phenomenal woman. I had the chance to meet her last year when I was campaigning for city council here in Detroit. She came and did a stop she stayed with us for about 4 days. But Cindy Sheehan is known for her protest where she set up a makeshift camp in front of George Bush's Texas home to challenge the fact that he illegally and improperly and under very extreme false pretenses took us into war. And what I appreciate about Ms. Sheehan is that she did not sit back and accept the fact that her son had been murdered in vain. And so she went to war with the government of this country in terms of exposing and revealing the corruption that loomed around that very, very illegal war that we were involved in. And so I just applaud Cindy Sheehan, and she seems to be a big fan of Reverend Pinkney as well, so I know she's going to be excited to talk to you.
Hey, you know, I'm going to be excited to talk to her because she's supposed to have came through Benton Harbor when she was on that bike tour, that thing she was doing. And
yes,
we had gathered up people for her, so when she came through it, it'd be well represented, you know. But, you know, Monica, I'm excited because I believe that people are going to wake up. This water issue might be the issue that wakes folks up, because when you're not able to wash yourself, when you are not able to drink enough water to for you and your children, I think that might be the issue that ricochet around this country. Because I tell you, if they do it here in Michigan, it's coming to your country next or your city next. Because I can tell you that much. Absolutely.
That's
but
right.
Listen, I'm going to go to Belinda Brown right now, and then when Cindy come on or when Kermit, either one of them come, punch in, I'll let you know. But let's go to Belinda Brown. Belinda Brown, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Pastor Pinkney. I'm really enjoying your show today, and the young lady is hitting the nail right on the head of exposing this kind of injustice. And you're right. They take away our water. Then the next thing they want to do is take the air away. And the air, you know, I don't know if you know about it, but they're already trying to sell air to people, you know. So I just want to let you know what you know, Pastor Pinkney. We're organizing and mobilizing the people down here in Louisiana, and we're on to something big down here, Pastor Pinkney, and exposing a lot of the injustice that's taking place. And, you know, what you're going through there in Benton Harbor is very significant to what the people suffered here, you know, for quite some time, you know. And Katrina told the real story about it. But, you know, the people down here is fed up, and I'm excited about it because people are starting to come out of these woods. You know, they're waking up, they're realizing that, you know, they cannot allow this type of injustice to continue, you know, when it comes to our kids, our grandkids, our great-grandkids, and the generations to come. We cannot sit back and not do nothing now. We have to act now. And I'm telling you, Pastor Pinkney, the people down here are outraged. And believe it or not, you know, a lot of the white people and other different nationalities, the Latinos, the Hispanics, the Asian people are coming out and joining up with us, Pastor Pinckney, because, you know, they see that, you know, if they're coming after the African Americans, you know, sooner or later they're going to be coming after them. And, you know, this is the message that we're getting out to let them know now is the time for us to unite, you know, on a strong united front as a force for justice and begin to, you know, organize and mobilize to stop this kind of these malicious acts that's been taking place down here. You know, I want to tell you something big, hot and burning that we got in the news right now. I'm located in Slidell, Louisiana, which is one of the richest. It's called St. Tammany Parish. It's one of the richest parishes out of all the 64 parishes here in the state of Louisiana. A lot of our legislation and our state senators and stuff come out of this parish. And what we have now is on the front page of today's paper is one of the most powerful figures in our parish. You hear me, Pastor Pinckney?
Oh, I'm listening to you. Go right ahead.
Okay, and he is our district attorney. This man have been in office for almost 30 years, okay, and everybody have been terrified to run against this man because this man is so wicked and so evil. And he's on the front page of the paper due to our internal investigation, you know, and 26 people and adding them every day on a criminal justice task force team that's working with Louisiana United International, a force for justice, to expose these people. Okay? He is lead district attorney for the whole St. Tammany Parish. And our 22nd Judicial Court is where his office, his main office, is at, right? So, listen, Pastor Pinckney, in this 22nd Judicial Court, these people are notorious for giving an African-American man more time than any other race. They have locked up more people than any other parish, okay, any more African-American than any other parish, you know, compared to percentage in the state of Louisiana. And you know that we have more people incarcerated per capita than anywhere else in the world. So I'm going to tell you, we went straight to the devil's den, and we began to dig up and root out all the corruption that's been taking place in the 22nd Judicial Court that this district attorney heads up. And guess what, Pastor Pinckney? This is the good news. Brace yourself. Get ready for it. The FBI raided his office on yesterday.
Wow.
Wow.
That's what I'm talking about.
Pastor Pinckney,
I'm
going to
get the FBI to come over here and raid Michael Schiff's office. Because, look, I believe they're coming to get him next. Because I tell you, we met the Justice Department here on Thursday, listening, getting through all the way in just to listen to this judge ruling. But I tell you, that is some great news, Belinda Brown.
Pastor Pinckney, I'm going to tell you right now, it's about all the people working together to get it done to make it better for all people, because we got an inside tip that he was in the office, okay? He had received the subpoena several days before, okay? And then we got an inside tip that somebody called us and let us know that he was trying to move the stuff out of his office and take it to another place.
Mm.
And we called him Pastor Pinckney right in the act.
Wow.
So I'm here to tell you that,
wow,
you know, and now people are no longer afraid. You wouldn't believe how ex-police officers, ex-detectives, retired law enforcement majors and commanders, everybody coming out of the woodwork, and they telling us everything that's been going on here for years.
Mm.
For years, okay, because these people are the citizens here in Louisiana is fed up with this kind of corruption that's been going on in our government. Now, I'm going to tell you something else, Pastor Pickney, and I know you got to go, but I want the people to know, okay, that, you know, racism is alive and well here in Louisiana. And I believe that if not, it could be that we are the root to a lot of racism that have spread it across the country, besides, I think, Mississippi and other places like that, Alabama. But, Pastor Pickney, I'm here to tell you that the people is rising up here, and the people is rooting it out. And what happened is that, you know, when I got here back in 2010, you know, people were still being beat up on the side of the road, you know, shot and tasered and everything by our law enforcement here. It's a new day, Pastor Pickney, because guess what? We've been in the news for the last 2 weeks because we had a ex-police officer that had been fired from the sheriff's office. He turned us over some explosive, racist, sexist, inflammatory emails that had been circulated throughout the entire sheriff department. Okay.
Wow.
And Pastor Pickney, wait a minute, listen. These people were majors, they were supervisors, they were commanding chiefs that were circulating this inflammatory emails, racist emails. They even depicted the president as a monkey. Okay. And it's been all in the news, Pastor Pickney, because we had a press conference on Wednesday morning, okay, June the 4th, and we went out and stood in front of the sheriff's office, and I'm going to tell you, Pastor Pickney, the people showed up, and we demand that the sheriff step down and immediately turn in his resignation.
Wow,
okay.
Wow, Belinda, that is tremendous.
Guess what he came back and said, Pastor Pickney?
Talk to me.
He came back and told us that he don't have no intentions of resigning. Okay? And guess what we went back and told him, Pastor Pickney?
Tell me.
We told him that he had the greatest opportunity to take a stand to take a stand against this type of disease that's been infiltrating our community. We don't have a race problem. We have a racism problem. And you had an opportunity to bring trust and faith into the people as our lead law enforcement. And because you did not do that, you might as well get ready because it's not over. And we're coming after you to get your office cleaned out and get rid of all of these sick people, and you right along with them.
Wow, Glenda, that is amazing.
Like, I'm a Pastor Pickney, they're shaking like Don Knox down here, and I'm going to tell you, and it's not just the African-American people, it's all the people have come together down here, Pastor Pickney, and it's the white people more so than the African American people that's saying we're gonna get rid of these people, we're gonna root out this sickness and this vile disease, and we're gonna put other people in office. Now listen, the sheriff been in office for almost 20 some years, the district attorney been in office for almost 30 some years, and people have been afraid to run against them. But now we got people lining up to run against them.
Way to go. Belinda, listen, you got about 2 minutes, so you can, whatever you want to say, just say it.
Well, what I want to say, Pastor Pickney, is that we want you to come down here in October because, you know, I'm telling you, we need you down here. We want you to be one of our keynote speakers. We're going to have a mass demonstration on the Capitol here in Baton Rouge, and we want people to come from all over to take a stand on the mass incarceration and help get a lot of these families restored, you know, with their family members that's been locked up for so long. on nonviolent offenses down here, Pastor Pinckney. We need you. We need you to come down and be a part of this. We're going to make history right along with national news on what the people here in Louisiana is going to stand up and speak out against.
Wow, that's tremendous. Hey, Belinda, I will definitely be there. That's a promise. And let's see what happens from there. I don't see Carl on here at all. I don't see Cindy on here at all. I don't see Kermit on here at all. So, Belinda, I got to move on. I got to let you go. Hey, thank you for the update. It was tremendous. And listen, we love you very, very much. I promise you that I will be there at all costs. All costs.
All right, Pastor.
And look, we're going to the questions to Michael Septic Arthur and Jared Sherrod Arthur and put them up against the wall so they can assume the position, because it's coming whether they like it or not, because these cases are opening the doors to so many things, but we have to learn to work together. Monica, do you have anything that you want to add on to that?
No, I just love Ms. Belinda. She took an awesome course in Louisiana. Thank you so much for your leadership, Queen Mother.
All right. Listen, got to move on, Belinda. Bring on Ralph. Ralph, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend.
Ralph Pointer from New York. My friend, my guy. How you doing, Ralph?
God, not as well as you.
Well, you know what, Ralph? I tell you, it's been a long 6 weeks or whatever that I was a prisoner in my very own house. But I tell you one thing, Ralph. I'm just happy to be able to be loose, but I'm still working on it. But the show still goes on with or without me. To me, that's important. Monica came on and she did a tremendous job. I mean, you have held up the fort. I'm so happy that someone took the torch and took it to a whole different level.
Well, as I said the first day that you were arrested, you have already won. Because when they had to go to these extremes to stop you, it was because you have beaten him. And now we have to continue fighting for the knockout punch. And I remember, as I was calling attorneys, and Lynn was calling attorneys from Detroit and Chicago, there was one theme that came out of every attorney's mouth, and that theme was, oh, Marion County is a bad place. So everybody knew about it, but they weren't saying it. You were the one that was saying it. And here we have on the world news the young man who has come back from Afghanistan. And what is the first thing that our government, your government, has done? They silenced him. He is in a, quote, hospital in Germany. He hasn't spoken to his family. He hasn't spoken to the media. He hasn't spoken to anyone because they are using that time to brainwash him for fear of what he might tell us about Afghanistan. And one of the things that everyone knows, they tried to silence you because they knew and we knew that you're a seasoned veteran that cannot be brainwashed. They can't tell you what to say and when to say it and how to say it. And they put you in jail for telling the people the truth about the corporations in the first place, for fighting the courts themselves, by putting these judges and district attorneys in positions where if they criticized you, they looked like fools, the fools that they are. But we must be very careful at this moment. When the federal government said they never heard anything as ridiculous as this, we still must remember it's the federal government that created this situation in the first place. Are they going to lean on their own? Is this judge going to go to jail? Is a district attorney going to go to jail? Are the police officers? officers going to go to jail in a corrupt conspiracy, which they all should, and it should go right up to the state house. They should all go to jail, but we know that they are not going to go to jail. And now that they have been exposed, we must look to the next step. And the next step is putting people like yourself, you, at the top of the control, the political instrument that guides our communities. You have to have that position. And people have to begin to understand that right now. And they know you're going to win the vote when you're able to run for elective office. And now we have to make sure that we have the people to count the vote when it comes. And so this struggle will continue. And we must continue to support people like yourself. And I do hope and pray that the people who have saved you, the people who say they're on your side, not only say it with words, but say it with money. Stop sending the money to the NAACP, as you said a long time ago, and send it to Reverend Pinky, somebody who's fighting for the cause, for the just cause of representation in this government. We have to stop supporting, not only we have stopped supporting Ben Jealous, but he's in another position someplace else. And we have to follow them around and stop them from using our communities as musical chairs. Throw them out of one place and they show up in another place with a job. We're doing the same thing, pimping the righteous movement of people for justice. We have to put an end to that. And I say that I am sitting here with a smile on my face so wide, because what they have done is they have identified for us the person who should be our leadership, the person they went after to stop from doing the right thing, the person who stood up, the person who could not be brainwashed. And I am so happy, Reverend Pinky, that we began to make a dent into this thing, but we have to not only make a dent into it, we have to kick it down by giving you 10 times the support to do that. Just think of what you've been able to do with people being very timid in their support. What could you do for our community? What could you do for Benton Harbor if we gave you 100% support? It would be life better for all of us. It could be a start. It could be a reversal of this privatization that is sweeping across the country, as you have said. It is started here, but it's not for here. It is for you. It is coming to your town next. And then they went to Detroit, and now it's all over the country. And your example of fighting back is just so thrilling that, you know, it was almost comic. House arrest. And somebody says, what? There was a question of a date out of petition. And it is almost funny. It was almost funny when Lynn Stewart was arrested, the great attorney, that when we had the pictures in the newspaper of one of the 10 top attorneys in New York, and we wanted to introduce this as to her background, the judge ruled it unacceptable, could not present this evidence. And the same judge allowed a 20-foot picture of Osama bin Laden to be projected on the wall every day. But that was okay. But you couldn't have a picture of Lynn Stewart, 10 best lawyers in New York. And so we see that we have to be careful about the law. We have to be careful about this government at every step of this struggle, and we have to remember we're in the position we're in because this government wants it that way. And as Frederick Douglass said, power concedes, you know, never concedes without a movement, concedes to nothing without a movement. You have started that movement, and we have to keep it going because you have demanded of this power that we have justice. You have demanded that the Justice Department do justice, and now we know they have to pay attention. So you have made a demand. We must follow up on this demand with supporting you. And I'm just going to sit back and listen to the people call in to congratulate you and say at the same time, they need to congratulate you with more effort of support for you. We have to make every politician, every organization say salute to the struggle of Reverend Pinckney and Benton Hobbit because it has just begun, but we have turned the bet. Thank you again, Reverend. We will talk after this. I so look forward to hearing the rest of the program and the people calling in with congratulations.
Let me ask you a question. I know that you've been in court a lot. You know, you have been doing a lot of things. But this judge, now listen to this. This judge, his ruling was that you did not need evidence to bind somebody over for trial. I never heard of that before. And the guy from the Justice Department said, wow, that is the most incredible news I have ever heard in my life. But the point is, down here in Benton Harbor, and probably in the state of Michigan, they've been doing the same thing for years, and nobody ever said anything.
Exactly. And as I compared you to the young man who said no to American foreign policy in Afghanistan, they're working on him right now. But they've been working on you. They put you in jail, but it didn't work. You stepped out and you fought them back, and now, you know, we have to continue supporting you, knowing that you have done in the past, are doing presently the right thing, and will continue to do the right thing for our community, all of our communities, if we give you proper support. So the sky is the limit, Reverend. And when I listened early to how the judge exposed himself, I heard it before with every lawyer that we called to support you. And as I say, it was unanimous. Barron County, that's a bad place. And so lawyers were afraid there, where you were fighting the lions with your bare hands, and you bring them to their knees. So, you know, all praises and honor to Reverend Pinckney and your struggle and your family who stuck with you when it looked bad, when you talk about house arrest and people were looking at me strange. And they'd say, what do I mean by house arrest? I said, he can't go outside his garage. I was there. And so it is so wonderful to be at this moment, but we must remember to work. The struggle continues, as Lynn says. The struggle continues. Thanks, Reverend Pinckney. We're looking forward to talking to you and working more with you.
All right. Well, Ralph, I can't say any more, but just hang on and don't leave me.
I will not. I'm sitting here, like I said, with agreement across my face. Wonderful.
All right now. All right. And Monica, have you noticed how things are? How's things up there in Detroit? Other than the ward, I know you have the emergency manager there and all these other things. Is there anything that you like to talk about?
Well, I know that I really want everybody to know how awful this bankruptcy is and how it is actually a manufactured, contrived financial emergency that is not it is not honest. It is not based on any truth or any facts. You've had some of these companies that have been embedded within city government here in Detroit for over 20 years, ever since the era of Mayor Young. And so they've come into the city, and what they've been able to do is they've been able to pretty much cook the books. And so we have one of the key issues right now was that the governor and this big grand bargain of supposedly where they're doing us a favor by taking our pensions but then giving us $190 million, when in actuality the state owes us over $735 million. They owe us in unpaid revenue sharing. They owe us money in terms of money that they've denied Detroit. They commandeered over $137 million that we took out in terms of a loan to be able to meet our shortfall. The governor of this state actually commandeered those funds and is ciphering them off to these contractors that are under emergency management. And so you've got that piece going on, and so we've been organizing with retirees, bringing them together, because what they want them to do is to agree to give away their pension. And we've been telling them and educating them all across this city and around this country, because a lot of the retirees live in other states now, is that they cannot agree to give away their pension. That would be like me agreeing that I'm going to continue to pay my mortgage and I'm going to continue to pay the insurance and all the repairs on my house, but I'm going to let somebody else live in it and dictate who comes and goes inside of that house. Well, I believe that Detroiters have paid to be in the city of Detroit. We have worked and fought and suffered and bled and died to be here. And for anyone to come into our city and to tell us that we don't have a right to be here, but then also for any corrupt politician to agree to give away any of our assets, to agree to sign away. There was a bunch of them that went to Mackinac up there for a policy think tank experience that was totally paid for, Reverend Pinckney, with money from people like the Koch brothers, the DeVosses, Roger Pinsky, Dan Gilbert. And they meet, and what they decide is they handpick political figures that they're going to fund their campaigns in order for those individuals to push their policies. And they've been able to be very successful and very deceptive in black communities by being able to actually recruit people that had at one time been very revered and respected members of the community. But these people have sold out. They're selling us out for a dollar and a biscuit and a chicken sandwich. They're not getting much, but they're willing to do it. And they're lining them up, preachers and politicians, nonprofit executive directors are going along with this. They're giving them hiding space by claiming that this is good for Detroit, that this is the only way to revive Detroit is to give away our assets, to privatize our jobs, to union bust. The only way to save Detroit is for the pensioners to say, we're going to give you our money, when the pension fund for the city of Detroit was better managed and better funded than the state of Michigan's pension fund. But part of the agreement, if they go along with this grand bargain, which I believe is nothing more than a grand heist, it's grand larceny is what it is. If they agree to this, what they're going to end up doing is agreeing to be under emergency management as pensioners. Because the administrative body of the state of Michigan will have total control for 14 years over the management of the pension funds, and no one that is a city employee or a retiree or has any affiliation with a retiree can sit on that board. So you and I both know what's going to happen. They're going to take our money. They're going to invest it in their interest. They're going to probably lose some of it conveniently to make sure that our pensions are underfunded and that our people end up suffering.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, listen, Monica. Hey, that's a you know, just having you and with all your knowledge, your wisdom. Hey, you know, we have so much love for you, and you're going to be with me every week. I hope, because this, you know, it might be the Pinckney and the Monica Patrick show. We're going to see how we're going to frame it, and then we're going to, having your own show once a week or whatever you want to do. I'm working on that too. But listen, I just got to move on. I'm going to go to my good friend Edward. Edward, are you there?
I certainly am, Reverend Pinckney. I am also delighted to hear that at least one part of your incarceration has been lifted. And they realized that they were really pushing it, letting you be the first person in ever to be banished from the internet and put under house arrest while being bonded out. Well, we've talked before, and I know that you're happy, but this is not the time to festively reward yourself. This is the time to push on harder than ever and get them while they're running away, so to speak. And they're not running away yet, I guarantee you that, but they are in a problem if you see through their nonsense. The courts are very, very, very corrupt. There's no question about it. I have much proof of that. You can watch videos. And Monica, just to let you know,
yes, sir,
that the retirement that everyone's got is going to be obfuscated, confiscated, call it what you want, by a presidential executive order. They're going to use it to buy bonds that the rest of the world isn't going to buy. They're going to have the 401ks and IRAs, I hear tell, and the retirements nationalized in everyone's best interest. That's what the
wow.
president will announce after the fact. So that's in response to what you had to say. People better watch out, and they better take heed right now, because if they don't have a dime left, it's going to get pretty scary if the dollar collapses in this country. There's no question about it. And there is a solution. You can talk to me privately, and I will explain. But let's talk about Reverend Pinckney's situation and how we can turn up the juice a little bit. Well, let's say we have a little chat with your attorney, Reverend Pinckney, and we talk about the fact that, and everyone knows this already, I'm not inviting any new information except what I'll say afterwards. Doctors don't know law, and lawyers don't know doctrine or medicine, let's put it that way. Well, the doctors in this country or the practicing physicians don't even know medicine. Unfortunately, they've never been trained in the proven ancient, authentic medicine that actually works in this world, and I've uncovered it all, and they don't want you to know about it. They're not really here to educate anybody on the real truth. They're here to enslave people in a monetary system that they sit and ride shotgun over the whole thing and pull the strings and the levers and treat everybody like puppets by corrupting them. The way you deal with, a doctor would deal with law is by going to a lawyer. And the way a lawyer would deal with medicine is by going to one of those doctors. Well, neither one of them knows what, you know, basically more than just statute law and code. And that's it for the lawyer. He never learns any of that other things. He doesn't learn common law, UCC, contract law. I'm saying this fast, but I could go into it more. Admiralty law, maritime law, and the highest of all, treaty law. And what does this mean that they don't know until they become judges and then they begin to study these things, according to the professor that explained all this to me? I've had the privy to associate myself with many great individuals. They're everywhere. And I learn from everyone the real truth about things. So let's look at this from a practical standpoint. That means lawyers and judges don't know anything about IRS, for instance. Well, I know a man that worked for the structure, the IRS structure, for many, many years. And the way to constrain a judge or a lawyer is to W-9 them. So why don't we ask them for their personal tax information, because we're going to hold them personally liable for stepping outside the law and causing a monetary inconvenience to, for instance, Reverend Pinckney, okay? By using the law in the wrong way, they have caused him to lose out on being able to reach out to his public and cost him quite a bit, actually. So the real way of handling a judge or a lawyer is, first of all, you can, if you find them break the law, any one of them broke the law, like in a foreclosure, the trustee is the weakest spot. He broke the law. He is moving ahead, pretending he has standing in a and jurisdiction, in the jurisdiction where he never had a promissory note and he never had the title, the deed rather, for the property in the trust deed that he's representing to be able to foreclose. That's why a lot of them just scare you off the property. They really don't want to go ahead and sell the property on the court steps. And you know why? Because they can't get title insurance. Well, getting back to Reverend Pinckney, basically, if they don't want to fill out the W-9, and why would they even fill out a W-9? Why are you asking them for it? because they just engaged you in the courtroom, which is a business. All charges, whether they're criminal or not, are all monetary charges. You know nothing about the courtrooms. People are listening, but they really don't know what's going on in the courtrooms, and they don't have the foggiest idea what is really going on in those courtrooms, okay? But I will tell you this. The lawyer, if you hand him a W-9 when he opposes you in the courtroom, and he's going to ask the judge what this is. A lot of them don't know. Well, they do have two sets of books, by the way. Anytime a lawyer receives a retainer, retainer, for instance, anytime, that is a free gift. They have two sets of books. They're allowed up to $5 million in untaxable money, all the lawyers. They call them liars in the UK. How fitting. They actually have another name for them, attorneys. And that's a French word, by the way. And I've been told that it actually means one who deceives. And I have met many attorneys in my life, and they actually teach you to lie on the stand. You didn't know that, I'll bet you. And it's beyond anything you can imagine, the actual corruption. So the only way to keep them in line is, since they engaged you to do business, you want their tax information. You want to know where they have all their money so you can lean up their bonds. If they mess with you, you want to take them out of business. Now, it is not illegal as a criminal thing exactly for a district attorney to make up charges against you if it furthers the benefit of the United States. So they're allowed to make up charges, put you in jail, keep you there like they did Noriega and all the others, without a trial, without anything. It doesn't really matter, and they can get away with it. But if you are on the outside, you can make mincemeat out of them by using a system that they didn't realize was going to wreak havoc on their life, that you have access to, and that you can get the upper hand. And that is, if they don't fill out your W-9 when you ask them for all their personal tax information, okay, and what they own and their assets, and they probably won't, you treat them as a hostile, and 3949A them. Now, when you hand the judge in the first place any criminal affidavit, it automatically changes, takes a civil case and turns it into a criminal case anyway. So if there's a lawsuit, you can change the whole picture of the thing. And it's another topic of conversation, but the judge is compelled to handle it to the grand jury. If he tries to hand it down to the DA to decide it, so he's pretending he's waiting for the DA's decision and let the DA be the one that is blamed for not moving forward with it, you tell him, no, judge. That goes to the grand jury directly. There is no decision. This is a criminal affidavit, a sworn affidavit. And if they were so corrupt in a town where they wouldn't do that, you can take that document and wait outside the grand jury, actually stand outside when they come out. It's perfectly legal, and hand them the affidavit and let them look it over and let them have a grand jury hearing on that individual that committed a crime. So there's a lot of things I just talked about, and I think I took up quite a bit of everybody's time. You know, I usually talk about reversing all your dysfunctional health, how simple it is, and Reverend Pinkneil is going to be backing me up on all this, because I've been taking care of a load of people that call in on this show, and they call me, and some of them call me Dr. Edward. You know, I don't mind, because it means teacher. At least I'm not a practicing physician that doesn't know how to cure anything or reverse anything, because they would get kicked out of the AMA if they actually started telling people they were curing anything. They're not allowed to, really. And, you know, it's just the way it is. Don't be mad at the system. Realize what it is, and let's beat them at their own game. That's all I can tell everybody. And keep up the good work. Whatever Reverend Pinkney says, if we had to call in to the judge, I want to know if he got his W-9 forms yet from the IRS. You know, I want to know if they, if Reverend Pinkney's got his information. That's why I want to talk to the attorney, okay?
Okay,
so
sounds good.
Give me a call. If anybody wants to talk to me, you can give me a call. I'll be doing my own radio show on health any minute now, and we can talk and bring everybody on that's got problems with their health, and we could change their health right on the radio show. Let's do it. I can do amazing counseling to individuals, and it works every time. So I'm not scared to actually show people what to do, and practitioners. Call me at 818-613-9206. 818-613-9206. And, of course, my name is Edward. And Reverend Pinckney, do you think we could whoop the pants off of them since they already did you dirty? And I don't know the rest of the where we stand on the actual case, why they're continuing, but I'm afraid they didn't want to drop the whole thing all at once. They should have. They'd be better off if they stepped out of it immediately. It would be a lot less reprehensible to them if you go after them properly, if you go after them in a way they don't understand.
Absolutely. Listen, Edward, we're going to talk about that, and let's talk about that after the show, because that W-9 sounds so good. Let's see where we can go with it, and let's
well,
see
you'll probably
we
have
do.
To issue the 3949A, because okay. They're not going to willingly give you all their information, but you'll get it, and then
yeah.
You go after their bond. Put them out of business.
Yeah.
You can put them out of business the same way, and let's not stand for the nonsense on the bottom level. You have to fight things at a grassroots level. You have no choice, because we can't win against the beast, the big beast, so we got to fight every which way we can.
Hey, that's correct. All right, Edward, listen, I got to move on, but listen, we will talk soon. Monica, is there anything you want to say?
No, just appreciate the call and the information.
All right, that's good enough for me. Let me move on. Mary, are you there?
I am here, Reverend Pinckney, and I want to really say how much I appreciate Edward and his information about the bun. I'd heard about that and it's something that I might put into action because, as I understand it, lawyers, judges, district attorneys, they all are bunded positions, and that means that somebody is holding their bund, and we can go after the bunding companies that are bunding these criminals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to do that. We need to take every avenue, as Edward said, to uphold justice. And we should not overlook anything. And, of course, lawyers will not tell you about the bonding companies. They will not tell you that you could go after that district attorney's bond, that judge's bond, that corrupt attorney's bond, because oftentimes they themselves are corrupt. Furthermore, lawyers take an oath that they will not do anything that brings shame to the U.S. Justice system. Now, the thing is, we know the U.S. justice system brings shame to itself. So what it must mean is that they will not reveal shame, because nobody has to bring shame to the U.S. justice system. It shames itself. But I think that attorneys are under, they're compelled not to reveal the injustices that are done daily in the U.S. justice system, such as what happened to me and such as what is happening now and has been happening for about a month or more to Reverend Pinckney. Now, Reverend Pinckney is a man like any other man, but he has a big voice. He has the voice that he has because he chooses to use his voice on behalf of the people against the powerful. And because he uses his voice on behalf of the people against the powerful, he has been attacked. And he has suffered something that I was told by attorneys that no other American has ever endured. And I was told, and you may have heard it, it was on a recent broadcast of mine, that was attorney Robin Lehmans, L-E-A-M-A-N-S, and she conferred with other attorneys, and they did research to try to find another case in the whole United States of America. And we do know that lawyers know how to do legal research. So let's acknowledge that. Lawyers know how to do legal research. So they were looking for another case in the whole United States of America in our history where another American has ever been barred from the Internet, and they were not able to find a single case. Reverend Pinckney has set another world record, everybody. He is the first U.S. citizen who's ever been barred from using the Internet. Now, she did find a case where they tried to bar a man from using the Internet, but that was turned over in the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals said, no, you cannot bar this man from using the Internet because the Internet is used for all kinds of purposes in the United States. You need it for MapQuest. You need it to get your weather. You need it to get your news. You need it to be able to research things. You need it for your classes. You need the internet to be able to find a job. So you cannot just categorically bar someone from the internet. Now, just think about this for a moment, please. How many crimes are done on the internet? Okay, we have people who spend their time looking at kiddie porn on the internet. They're not barred. Even when they're convicted of using the internet for kiddie porn, they're not barred from using the internet. We have people who do bank fraud on the internet. They're not barred. We have people who use the internet in order to do all kinds of scams. They're not barred. We have people who cyber stalk. They're not barred. We have people who do identity theft by way of the internet, and they were not barred from using the internet. We have people who do all kinds of serious crimes on the internet, and none of them, even the ones who were convicted, were barred from using the internet. You are talking to, you are listening to the radio program of the only American who's ever been barred from using the internet. Not only was Reverend Pinckney barred from using the internet, and he's accused of election fraud, and they collected signatures, get this, not on the internet, they collected signatures for the recall petition for the mayor of Benton Harbor by handwritten signatures. It didn't have anything whatsoever to do with the internet. But he was barred from using the internet, and his wife was barred from using the internet at her home. And she wasn't even accused of any crime. They just reached into Reverend Pinckney's house and stole his freedom of press and stole his wife's freedom of press also. And she was not accused of any crime. So that's how arbitrary our so-called inalienable rights are in the United States of America in the 21st century. They are so arbitrary that the establishment withdraws your freedom of press, your freedom of speech. They withdraw it because you have a relative that they want to keep off the internet. Understand that Miss Dorothy was not accused of anything, but she was barred from using the internet at her home address because her husband was accused of doing election fraud, and that wasn't a crime he was accused of doing by internet. It comes down to this. They're sick of black people using Blog Talk Radio. They're sick of black people being able to write to each other about the injustices they suffer. They're sick of Caucasians being able to use the internet. See, it was never intended that the regular man, that's you and me, it was never intended for us to have mass communication. When the internet was put out there, they didn't recognize how powerful it would be for getting justice quests together. They didn't realize that it could be used to tell about the injustices that regular people suffer. No matter whether they're black, white, Native American, Asian, it doesn't matter. They did not realize at the time that you and I would use this wonderful, marvelous tool of mass communication to be able to reach the masses for justice. They didn't realize it until, I tell you exactly when they got the message. It was during Janae 6. Do you remember that? The people organized a protest down in Louisiana, and it drew something like 20 or 30,000 people, went to that little town in Louisiana and stood up for black citizens, black high school boys who were incarcerated because they protested nooses being hung from the trees on campus. These black boys protested nooses being hung from the trees on campus, and wherever the noose was, that meant that that area was for white only. They protested that, and they put those black boys in jail when, I believe, physical violence broke out between them and some white boys. And 20 or 30,000 people were organized online, not under the auspices of the NAACP, not under the auspices of any organization where they could control, okay? See, whenever you do things under an organization. They just simply try to get to the head of the organization and pay them a little sum, and then the whole protest is over. But this was organized by the people, and they went down to Louisiana on behalf of Janae 6, that's in Janae, Louisiana, and they protested. They ran that town over, and they protested those black boys being persecuted for standing up for their human and civil rights. So after that, they realized, wait a minute, this thing is powerful. The Internet is powerful. We have got to keep regular people from being able to use the Internet freely. So for a long time, the way they prevented Internet usage.
Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you.
But for a long time, they did it. They did Internet censorship American style. And the way they did it was, honey, I'm telling you, they were scrambling messages. They were stealing links out of emails. They were doing some of everything, and if you look that up, Internet Censorship American Style, and put my name, Mary Neal, I give you examples of how they've been censoring everybody, and it didn't start with Edward Snowden telling you about it. It started as much as, way back. It started a long time ago, and I have been a prime target. But now they are tired of trying to hide their hand, throw the rock and hide their hand. They say, you know what, let's be bold. Let's just step right up there and tell Reverend Pinckney that we're sick of him getting on the Internet radio, that's Blog Talk Radio, and telling people how low down and dirty we are. We're sick of him calling on people to only support organizations and unions and churches that really stand for the people. We're sick of him saying to people that you need to put up or shut up. That's one of Reverend Pinckney's favorite phrases. We're sick of him making people aware of Justice Quest that we had squashed. Reverend Pinckney let me come on the radio and tell you about the Jenny Cochran firm fraud every Sunday with other black media, and I say black media, or they're in on the Cochran firm fraud. They're helping that law firm defraud black people after they've lost their relatives to police violence. They're helping by their salary. But Reverend Pinckney won't play these games. He left his position as president of the NAACP in Benton Harbor because he didn't want to be a part of that corrupt organization that was really working on behalf of Whirlpool and corporations. He wanted to work within his organization, BANCO, that's BH, that's Benton Harbor, Banco, BANCO. He said, I'd rather head my own organization than to be a party to something that I have found to be completely corrupt and unacceptable. So he left the NAACP. And so they didn't even have a way to get to him by threatening him. Oh, we'll take your position away. They threatened him. But he said, here's your position. Here's your NAACP. I don't want it anymore. And as a matter of fact, he turned around and got together marches against the NAACP. We marched against the NAACP last April 4th. That's the day they killed Martin Luther King in 1968, April 4th. So last year, around April 4th, Reverend Pinckney had organized marches against the crooked, dirty, hypocritical NAACP. So they don't like that. They have used certain leaders, so-called leaders, in order to mislead African Americans for some time. And don't think that is something they limit to African Americans. I've talked a great deal to Native Americans lately, and they're doing the same thing on the Indian reservation. They're using the council, they call it. They're using the council on reservations to work against the people's best interests. They're not only doing it on Indian reservations. They're not only doing it to African Americans, but they're misusing your unions, even if you're Caucasian, to work against the interests of workers. They're using your churches to work against the interests of people. And see, Reverend Pinckney allows people to come on his show and tell about these injustices, and they are sick of it. So when they put him down on those false charges for election fraud, they decided to take away his freedom of press at the same time. It had nothing to do with the charges, but they don't want him to have freedom of press. That's all it is. They don't want his wife to have freedom of press. And even though she had no charges, they took away her internet privileges at her house.
Absolutely.
Now, when Reverend Pinckney went to his hearing on the 30th, when he went to his hearing on the 30th, he was released from, yes?
You got 90 seconds.
All right. Thank you, sir. When he went to his hearing on May 30th, he was released from that absurd ban against his internet usage, and so was his wife. He was also released from house arrest, but the judge bound him over for trial on these indefensible charges, saying that he did election fraud because he sponsored a petition and people signed it because a great number of people agreed with him that the mayor does not have the citizens of Benton Harbor interest at heart. So it wasn't just Reverend Pinckney's petition. Every one of the signatures on the petition agreed that that man does not belong in the mayor's office. So they want to punish an American for using a peaceful democratic process that we all thought we could use, which is the process of recall, to recall elected officials who are not doing their job. They arrested Reverend Pinckney for that. They did bound him over for trial. We are asking you to please go to bhbanco.org, see the PayPal depository, and deposit a generous donation against this political prisoner, a man of God who speaks for the poor and needy. We want you to play to show that you are with him. Please.
All right, all right. Thank you so much, Mary. I tell you, we need that, and we need it right away. We need to raise $5,000. We got 10 days to raise $5,000. So those of you who are out there who have a few dollars, please go to PayPal. Donate from PayPal. Do what you can, and we need that money as soon as possible because we are appealing the decision. We are appealing the bond over for trial decision, because they had no evidence to do it. On that note, it's my T.I. time. It's time for my target individuals. It's time for them to speak up. It's time for them to put up or shut up. Right now, I got to bring in my good friend, my girl, from Philadelphia area, Gloria. Gloria, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney. I'm right here.
Gloria, I really miss that voice, girl. I got to tell the truth. I miss that voice of yours. You got to give it to me. Come on.
That was the day we were leaving Michigan that I wasn't on. That was the only day
right.
I missed.
Right.
But I'm here to pick it up. What everyone was talking about today, this is what I'm reading about. It was written last year, July 31st, 2013, by Marilyn Sondheim, and it's filed under Big Brother Bureaucrats, Constitution, Liberation, Police, State, Politics. Fox News reported on Tuesday that the government has created a behavioral insights team, which intended to influence the behavior of Americans. It is being referred to as a nudge because the team's approach has been dubbed subtle. One can only assume that such nudges are intended to be the second part of a governmental 1-2 punch, the first being ham-fisted executive orders. The first forces compliance. The second is designed to mesmerize one into voluntary acquiescence. That means, like, you're going along with it, although you didn't say you're going along with it, but you're going along with it. The program isn't in the planning stage. It's already been implemented. Fox News reports the White House is already working on such projects with almost a dozen federal departments and agencies, including Department of Health and Human Services, and the Department of Agriculture. The government released touts advantages of the program. Behavioral sciences can be used to help design public policies that work better, cost less, and help people to achieve their goals. The behavioral insights team would experiment with various techniques with the goal of tweaking behavior so people do everything from saving more for retirement to saving more in energy costs. Anyone interested in working for the White House in a nudge squad? The UK has and one been extraordinarily successful. The program cites benign examples of its intentions, but White House-inspired behavioral modification experimentation won't stop at cajoling us to save more for our old age. It is less about helping people achieve their goals and that it is to help the Obama regime achieve its goals. Fox News ended with a cautionary note from Jerry Ehrlich, an economics with the McCosta Center. If you can keep it to a nudge, maybe it can be beneficial. But nudges soon turn sharply to shoves. Mr. Ehrlich is dead wrong about a nudge from government being beneficial. A nudge from government is never beneficial to anyone except the government. We almost have 6 years of that evidence to prove it. Thank you for listening.
Wow, thank you so much, Gloria. That's tremendous. I hope people understood exactly where you was coming from, because I tell you, that is something incredibly that people need to listen to. But listen, you got 30 seconds. If you want to add to that, go right ahead. Don't be shy. Whatever you want to say,
sure.
It's fine with me.
All right. Well, what is happening, what this paper is saying, is that the government is targeting every individual out here for you to do what they want you to do and to go along with the programs that they want you to go along with. And you're going to get to the point where they're going to say, listen, we're going to have to save more on our energy, so everyone's lights get cut off at 9 o'clock at night.
Mm.
Then will you stand up and participate? Thank you for listening, and free the land.
Wow, wow, that's amazing. And Monica, you hear that? The government want to control everything. There's nothing they don't want to control. They want to control you, me, and everybody else. If you don't dance by their music, they try to cut your legs off. That's what they try to do. So this is what's happening now, more or less, with me. They're trying to cut my legs off. They say that I can get up to life. Well, I'm 65 years old. What is life? You know, for a black man, you know, that's 5 years. You know, I think our life expectancy is around 70, 72 years old, something like that anyway. So what are they talking about? If they can't stop you, they find ways to cut your legs off. But we have to learn to work together, Monica. This is something that we can do, and it has to be done. So on
that
note, Monica, go right ahead.
Well, just wanted to let you know, I just checked my messages, and Cindy Sheehan is ill, and so she will not be able to join us today. But I told her I would get with you after the show, and we looked at rescheduling her. So she definitely wanted apologies. But also her regards and her respect for you and your fight in this struggle. Can I just add one quick thing about what Ms. Gloria just said?
Yes,
what
go right ahead.
In Detroit and all across Michigan is the privatization of utilities, the privatization of police departments and fire departments. And what we're finding is the more they corporatize these entities, they are shipping in young people from all over the country so that those persons have no connection to the people or to the community. And with that, they are willing to just obey orders without blinking, without thinking. And so we know that they have a situation here in Detroit where they are using what they're using is a term called authority. They're authoritizing things. And then that way the city and the taxpayers continue to pay for it, but the municipality or the corporation, or even in our case here in Detroit, the nonprofit controls the entity and is able to extract wealth out of that particular entity. And they're doing it with light. They're doing it with water. They're doing it with our health department, our Department of Human Resources. All of those things have been outsourced.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. But listen, we got to move on. But, hey, I tell you, we are on a roll today. God bless you. Monica, I don't know where I would be without you. Dorothy, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Great, great, great. You sound good. Talk to me.
Thanks. Well, let me get into it. I'm going to request that Miss Monica, as well as Miss Belinda, hopefully I have the name right, from Louisiana, get a hold of you and get my number.
Okay.
I want to share some information with them offline. General Honoré, this is a U.S. Army general, was on C-SPAN years ago, and he was actually saying before the Obama administration took office in the second term that blue gold, known as water, would be the number one issue, and if no one talks about it, then you know something is hinky. There's something up with it. The other is recently there have been a whole bunch of C-SPAN information on the rapes, the rape epidemic throughout our colleges. Now, please know, there were Department of Justice people there. There were, you know, really well-intentioned individuals that were clearly there. And yet, when I was calling around to these individuals, I was saying, you know, it's not just about the rapes, although everybody needs to be very aware of this. What it is also about is something called neuro-linguistic programming. And this goes back to what previous readers have said about the nudge. Because you see, there's something called the Himmler-Hitler-Eichmann study. Now, this came across from the pond of the Germans into America in the 40s after World War I. This was the allowance of physical abuse, sexual abuse, and psychological abuse. I just don't mean a rape, although a rape or abuse, beating up a person, is traumatizing or psychological abuse. We're talking severe abuse of children under the age of 5. So for those, by any chance, who've seen inner city violence or community violence in any way, gang altercations where drugs, weapons, or alcohol were shipped in to escalate those situations when jobs, which were there in plentiful, bountiful means, began to dry up, not because there was lack of work, but because it was about leadership doing the human squeeze on the people that they wanted to mess with. Because that's ultimately what it comes back to. And if you go back to Detroit, the Chrysler leadership, before the bailout, about a year and a half before, the CEO got $25 to $27 million per quarter in one-fourth of the year. $27 million in stock options, money, and other things. Now, that was a percentage of it, we don't know how much, was federal funding that was helping that corporation. And the board of directors were directly involved in it, in allowing for that, and then it would go bust, and then, of course, the American people got to bail it out and the other companies. And most people don't track this stuff, but coming back to our college campuses, what's going on is that these things and the Himmler-Hitler-Eichmann study in the brutalization of people is the ongoing, not just nudge, but kicking, prodding, manipulation, abuse by what I call organized criminal trauma networks. These are part of the elite systems up, down, left, and right. Ronald Reagan said it's not about the left or the right, it's about the up and the down. And these are not people who care about human beings. They call themselves pro-lifers. Let me call them pro-birthers. What do I mean by that? These people don't care how you get here, but when you're here, they're going to abuse you, use you, and kick you and put you down. And they will even sell your children through manipulation, through sexual slavery, through abuse, and that includes even through the Catholic Church. And please know, I don't mean to offend anyone who's Catholic, because this is across the board in every system that there is in America, sadly. But the Catholic Church, multiple popes, even those who've recently been sainted, were directly involved in this and did nothing. So when you're talking the very pinnacle of these systems, and then the U.S. Bishops' Conference that have been well entrenched in hiding and now even undermining the different city, states, and counties allowing for the abuse of these children, and which these organized criminal trauma networks keep brutalizing these kids, teasing, messing with them in schools, causing chaos so they can't remember what they've been through, in which they're manipulating and stirring their lives into different things in which it can and is showing up in human sexual slavery, not just after your children are out of schools, as I told an expert who was on this recent commission on C-SPAN dealing with the rapes in colleges, but the children who have been traumatized growing up, that are going to colleges, having their parents or taking loans to go to into industries where they will be most likely brutalized and used torture and drugs and brutalization on them, like I saw when I was forced into the United States military and I was put into sexual slavery as an officer and a commander, and I witnessed that across the board, any place that I attempted to even go into the court system, when I attempted to get the legal system to respond based on the rules that were nothing more than facades, they would shut us down and re-traumatize us. This were doctors, lawyers involved. These were leaders of every rank and file. This was people who were in these elite systems. And even though good old Mr. McCain, Senator McCain, has said that the VA, there's good people in his VA, I can assure and attest to that, that there are not. That while there are individuals, I'd say yes, who are very kind when I was out in Phoenix, I witnessed and reported repeatedly the criminal abuse of veterans who have been brutalized in our military and then subsequently criminally brutalized in VA systems for 20, 30, 40, some 50 years, denied their right to their voice, denied their right to safety, which is an absolute essential of all human beings to recover from trauma. It has been the intention and deliberate ongoing manipulation by these systems to not just deny them their benefits, which they well deserve, but also to break them down to either kill themselves, harm somebody else, and deliberately to go off. Because when you tighten down any person, continually brutalizing and bullying them, you will end up pushing somebody into a position of defense. And that's what they're doing. They're attempting to radicalize people. I witnessed it. I lived it. And so Mr. McCain, although he clearly does not know what he's speaking of, because I've witnessed quite the opposite, and sadly, I even went to his office back in the 2000s and reported some of these crime, at which his military liaison sitting there told me, you know, it's your word against our word, and he grinned and laughed. Now, this is the kind of stuff that's going on, folks. So I do not advocate for any violence. I do not advocate for any, unless, of course, you have to stand up for yourself and you're going to be put at danger. But again, for you, Mr. Reverend Pinckney, I'm glad you're out, but here's something else. For anyone who has to deal with a court case, please make sure you remember, because I was law enforcement, trained in college in law enforcement, and I had a professor by the name of Dr. Widener, constitutional law. He would tell us that in the 80s, as early as the 80s and even probably before that, they had psychologists that were helping to pick the juries. That was seen in the O.J. Simpson trial and many others. That's called jury tampering, folks. That's not getting peers. It's specifically picking people that will be either anti the victim in rape cases and domestic violence and even trying to protect children, which our courts are actually giving abusers of children, giving the children to the abusers throughout this country. It is an epidemic in which children are being brutalized. But that is also the selection and putting good and decent people in prison under false pretenses by jury selection and manipulation. So remember, there's that part of it too. any type of psychology being used, especially when you go out and look at CCHR.org, and look at the hidden enemy, that shows psychology has been so tainted that they've made up disorders. They've made up stuff. Do your research in these things so that we need to be able to help protect each other and stand firm for true law, for human rights, for equal, truly equal rights. And I would like to invite those senators and congressmen who dare to say that, you know, sexual slavery is not happening in our military, sexual abuse is not happening, like Senator Rand Paul, who recently proclaimed that men cannot be raped, I would invite him to invite the rapist to come talk to him. Let them show him how it works. Men can be raped, and there is an epidemic of this as well. Good and decent men are being destroyed. And sadly, I would invite the senators who say that the VA is a great place to go to end up going there themselves. Let's see what kind of treatment they get. I'm sure they will get above average treatment. But again, I have reported the criminal abuse in Ohio of the VA systems. I can't get any senator or congressman off the dime to investigate Ohio and the criminal abuse of veterans here, as well as even Phoenix. But we're going to keep pushing.
All right.
Thank you for listening.
All right, Dorothy. You have a beautiful day, and take care of yourself and enjoy all this good weather. Amen. 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 Ms. Tams, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pickney. I'm glad to hear that you're back.
Hey, how you doing? I'm back, and I'm ready to fight some more. I tell you, there's never been a fight I did not like, and I tell you, these folks, they got a fight on their hands. Barron County already know they're going to use all the tricks in the book. But I tell you what,
they will,
because
everything that you're saying you went through, that's what they did to me. They didn't put me on house arrest. They threatened me with a gag order. They just, I mean, everything that I'm listening to all these people, the lady that just got off the air, I don't know her name, but what she was talking about, experience. My ex-husband is a psychology major, Dr. Tynes. He's a pediatrician also. And they have my kids, actually they're exploiting my kids. They have my daughter Camille in the free press, in the newspaper. They had Maura Corrigan, the head of the Department of Human Services in Michigan next to her. They had the governor next to her. And I'm like, why are they putting her in the newspaper? And she's not exposing what they've done to her and the family and how they, you know, worked with their dad, who was a child rapist. And, I've tried to speak with her. I haven't been able to reach the rest of the kids. I spoke to my son, Michael. I called the school on his birthday in April, and he acts very scared. And that's not my kid's normal behavior to behave like that. So I definitely, you know, can agree with what the lady before got off that had stated, that I think Gloria was talking about. And you know, your show is just very educational, and that's why everybody has to come together so that it could be a system put together or organization to come against when people come up against stuff like this, because you don't always know how to fight against it, or you don't always have the endurance or the energy to fight it because you're not using the right tools to go at them, you know, to go back at these people. So, I mean, it's just really crazy because I'm listening. I'm like, wow, finally. Some other people are coming up and speaking on what I was talking about, and everybody was trying to say that I was crazy when I would come out and speak. And I'm pretty much a no-nonsense person, you know, and my kids are like that also. You know, if I speak something, I'm speaking the truth about it, you know, because I've never have been a foolish-minded person, and that's what people know me as. They always say, well, you're serious-minded, even when I used to work as a lifeguard and stuff. The guys that would try to talk to me or whatever, or flirt, they would get so upset because I was 17, 18 years old, and they would tell me, you speak like you're my grandmother. Why are you talking like that? Because my mind wasn't on foolishness. My mind was on doing the right thing, and if I seen someone trying to hurt someone, I stood up for them, and that's what this guy who I know, who's a school teacher, told me when I ran into him, and I told him what I was dealing with my ex-husband, and he said, I ain't never known you to be somebody to back down against when something going wrong. You always lock like a pit bull and don't let go until you get the truth out of something. And he said, I've been knowing you since you've been 17 years old. So, I mean, it's just really amazing. And the young lady that you had hosting for you, Monica Patrick, she's dynamite. You know, she's on the ball. She's intelligent. She knows what she's talking about. And a lot of people are not educated on, you know, what is being spoken on your show. And, you know, the people, a lot of them don't know what to do. A lot of them are afraid. A lot of them don't know where to go to, or who to trust, you know, or they'll see people trying to attempt to fight and then they get shut down. Because when they did those tactics with me, saying that I had to shut up about my ex-husband raping the children, raping me, drugging me, and I'm having problems with my kidneys now from whatever poison he put in my system, he's caused some damage. And I remember when we was in the court, when Daniel, our son Daniel, you know him, in 2007 or 8 came out and told the court about his father currently molesting him and drugging him. And they mocked it, and I couldn't believe how they laughed at him. And, you know, at that time, Daniel was of age to speak. And when my ex-husband, Dr. Pine, saw that they didn't do anything about it, he stepped outside of the courtroom door, but we were still in the court building, and laughed in Daniel's face and said, Daniel, I still love you. And Daniel looked at him, and he just said, Mama, you said if we speak up that we would get some help. And, you know, and I couldn't do anything but just feel bad because I did what I knew to do, you know, and I fought the best I knew how to do, but still, my kids are kidnapped. My kids have been indoctrinated to think the way they want them to think, the system and their father. And, you know, he is a part. He even stated, he said, I'm a part. I'm doing a government study on Joshua, our oldest son. When he was flipping out and behaving unstable, he went through the process of shutting off our water when our son Michael was a new baby, and I was going in and out of paralysis from whatever he did to me, put in my system and the damage that he's caused. So he's done a lot of things to try to make it look as if me and the children are the problems. But as I've stated, he has too many former nurses, patients, and coworkers who have complained about his sexually abusive, overtly controlling behavior. And then 3 years ago when I went back to Benton Harbor to try to reopen my divorce to get some kind of fairness because the attorney told the judge, Nelson Thompson in Benton Harbor, Michigan, he said, you broke the law in Ms. Times' case. He said, I've never heard of a judge leaving a party destitute. She had 6 children. Why would you do that? The judge ignored it, and he basically tried to intimidate him to back down. And he told me, the attorney told me, J.S. Patel, he said, they're breaking the law in your case. He said, the judge in Detroit, Virgil Smith, they're breaking the law there. He said, they don't have any grounds to take your children. He said, the information that he read, and he said, I can't understand why they're doing this. And every judge that got on my case, every social worker that got on the case, after I had to leave my ex-husband, and they used that as a tactic to say I didn't have housing, but I was married to a doctor, and we owned many homes, that he ended up getting out from up underneath me illegally and giving it to a lot of his colleagues. And I have proof of all that. And, I mean, each judge, each social worker, each therapist has stated, we haven't had a chance to view your case, so we're just going based on what basically my ex-husband, Dr. Tynes, is saying. And the police investigator, Evans, she told me directly, she said, I used to work sex crimes. She said, you have more than enough evidence. She said the judge is obstructing justice and breaking the law in your case. But no one stepped up to do anything to put a stop to it. So my thing is that, you know, I have, like I said, I haven't heard from any of my kids. I spoke to Camille by email at the University of Michigan, and I have her transcript that where basically they gave her a 4-year college degree. She was kicked out for a certain period of time because her grades kept falling, but yet they're trying to get her back in. And now the Department of Human Services system is using her to give speeches. And I'm like, what is going on here? You know, and I've seen, like I said, I've seen all of my kids going to some type of altered state of behavior. And even for my ex-husband, aunt, to say he had put Joshua under hypnosis. And after my kids got out of the system, I seen something was wrong with their behavior. So I can definitely tell that they have been really traumatized, scarred, because even my daughter, Linye, was telling how our son, Michael, he was urinating every time Donald would call him in when he was in the foster home. or when he would see him, and he would just become afraid, and they ignored that. And the children's center, one of the social workers there had said, well, it's obvious he's traumatized by the father, and they're ignoring many signs, and they're not doing their job. So, you know, I know Donald has to be a part of some type of elite group. He is ex-military. He's ex-Air Force. Where he's a part of doing these studies, because even for him to tell me when I was in Benton Harbor, St. Joseph, Michigan, when we lived out there, he said, I'm doing a government study. When I looked at our son Joshua, he had dog tags on, and I've got information on that, what that really means, and that was strange to me. And even my oldest brother, he said, Agent Joshua, act like he don't even know us. You see how he's totally under Donald's control. And I saw that, you know, and currently I'm speaking to a gentleman. He just called me yesterday, named Brian Law. He does documentation and, videography or videos of people who have been exposed to mind control. And he has Dr. Colin Ross, who's a psychiatrist who has an organization in Grand Rapids and in Texas that deal with people who are under mind control, because I was talking with several of those people, and this guy, he wants me to contact him back and give him more information, because he's on the, you can look him up on the internet. But they have Camille, our daughter, in the, you could type in her name, K-A-M-I-L-L-E-T as in Tom, Y-N-E-S, on the internet in the free press. They have, Governor, Snyder, he was at the meeting or the conference or whatever, and they were saying that they get close to $500,000 for the foster care system. And she seems to think that she's trying to help reform the foster care system. And a judge in Florida has said the foster care system is so corrupt that, you know, it's not good for anyone to go into that system. So really they're using her to get funding and money. And all of my kids are intelligent, but it's still, you know, I'm looking at what they're doing, even how they paid her way through the University of Michigan. And her grades, I mean, just were really bad, you know, and several other of her colleagues have stated that when their grades dropped, they got kicked out the first semester, and they kept her there for 4 years, and now they're trying to get her back in. And, you know, I'm just trying to get my kids out from up underneath that and get the right people in to undo some things, you know, what they've gone through, because my kids, I couldn't ask for better kids before their father did the things that he did to them and just messed them up. And you know, people would be shocked to hear a doctor would go out of his way to hurt his own flesh and blood children like the way that he's doing and the way that he's done. So, and it's just crazy.
Right. You know, Adrian, it's amazing that you said all that. Yeah, I have met your children. You have some wonderful children, some beautiful children. And I don't understand it myself. But listen, you got about 60 seconds to say whatever you want, and I got to move on. But listen, stay in touch.
Okay. I just want to say, like I said, I want to try to get together with someone, you know, through your show.
Mm-hmm.
And because my kids have been psychologically tampered with, but they have to make them look and sound like they're, you know, okay, but I know, and I've seen their behavior, you know, behind closed doors, like I've seen their father's behavior, and people who know him, they've seen his behavior as well. So this is something very serious that's going on, you know, and I just want to, you know, get in contact with someone, you know,
okay,
soon through your show.
Well, listen,
so that I can get
did you want to give out your phone number to people, or how you want to do that?
I think you had said that some people were asking for the phone, you know, for my
phone number. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can give my phone number
out
and email. My phone number is 734-218-5806, and my email is mckeitanofnorthireland @gmail.com, and that's Adrian Tynes.
Very good. All right, Adrian, I got to move on.
All right.
You have a great day. Sahara, are you there?
I'm here, Reverend Pinkney. Welcome back.
Yay, glad to be back. You know how it goes. Hey, I miss my group.
We're very glad to have you back. I'm going to start by saying hello. This is Sahar Shinier, founding spokesperson of Stop Not Consensual Experiments on All World Citizens. Snowy Oak is the acronym. Snowy Oak's goal is to help peacefully raise awareness of non-consensual human experimentation worldwide to help make it stop. Snowy Oak community updates are most frequently posted to facebook.com/SNOEOAWC. That was S, N as in Nancy, O-E-O-A-W-C. Today is Sunday, June 8th, 2014, and I'll start with a note and request, then read about a set of unfortunate events that has been haunting me since I came across the information very recently of a 16-year-old, Sylvia Likens, who was assaulted to death in what sounds like a case of ritual abuse from 1965 that has yet to be thoroughly investigated. I realized upon reviewing last week's broadcast when Reverend Pinckney's guest host, Monica Fitzpatrick, first opened the phone line with the same beginning phone digits as my phone number, that the voices of two men heard are that of my stepfather and uncle, who were several hours driving distance away from my location at the time. That phone number itself belongs to my mom, with whom I had just spoken by phone to be sure that she would be all right with me sharing on the broadcast our experience of being targeted in New York City several years ago. She was out of state in the car with my stepfather and uncle. My uncle's voice is heard asking, "What the heck is that?" The sound frequencies that can be heard from just before 63 minutes into the June 1st, 2014 broadcast do sound like the neurologically disrupted sound frequencies to which I've been subjected for years, since the lifelong targeting that I have experienced most blatantly escalated on the campus of the government-funded university that I attended prior to transferring to my alma mater. So to be clear, where I graduated from and actually where I transferred to as a result of the targeting I experienced beforehand is not where I experienced the set of events of being specifically targeted that I've referred to before on the radio and so forth. As previously noted, I was one of several female scholars who were targeted by the semi-secret society, the on-campus leader of which was called by members of the society Beelzebub. He said during that time that his parents made him rape the particular targets. His father has led research through the U.S. Naval Academy, the website is usna.edu, into pulsed signals buried in noise. Frequencies that sound the same or similar are audible in my narration of the emails between Aaron Alexis and Derek Robinson, to the point of overriding one's ability to focus on the narration. Consequently, I posted my interview with Mr. Robinson without the narration and so forth to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/CHIN-YEREDOTCOM. If someone has expertise with regard to analyzing such sound frequencies to determine their source, nature, etc., please let me know. I check and respond to messages within 2 days to sahar.shinier@facebook.com. According to the first sections, I'm only going to go over the first sections. The rest is there on the Wikipedia page for who wants to look it up. The first sections of the current Wikipedia page for Sylvia Likens. Sylvia Marie Likens, January 3, 1949 to October 26, 1965, was an American murder victim from Indiana. She was tortured to death by Gertrude, I have a difficulty pronouncing this name, I meant to find out, I think it's Beniskuski, Gertrude's children, and other young people from their neighborhood. Her parents, who were carnival workers, had left Likens and her sister Jenny in the care of the family 3 months before her death in exchange for $20 a week. Beniskuski and her daughter Paula and son John, plus two neighborhood youths, Coy Hubbard and Richard Hobbs, were charged with and convicted of the crime. Likens' torture and murder were described by the prosecutor in the trial as, quote, the most terrible crime ever committed in the state of Indiana. This is a short background section. It's just 2 to 3 paragraphs. Sylvia Likens was the third child of carnival workers Lester Cecil Likens and his wife Elizabeth Frances Betty, who went by Betty. She was born, that is, Sylvia was born between two sets of fraternal twins, Diana and Danny, and Jenny and Benny. The Likens' marriage was unstable, and the family moved many times. Sylvia and her sister Jenny were often boarded out or forced to live with relatives, such as their grandmother, so their schoolwork would not suffer while their parents were on the road. I'm going to skip, actually, to abuse and death. This is the last section I'll read from, because I see we're running out of time. Lester Likens agreed to pay the head of the household $20 a week, but when the stipend was late, she, as described by the Indianapolis Star, as a haggard, underweight asthmatic, suffering from depression and the stress of several failed marriages, began taking her anger out on the Likens girls, beating them with paddles. Danisiewski soon forced her abuse exclusively on Sylvia, accusing her of stealing candy that she had bought from a grocery store and humiliating her when she admitted that she once had a boyfriend. Paula, who was pregnant at the time, and I do remember from reading other sources, Paula is the daughter of the head of the household, kicked Likens in the genitals and accused her of being pregnant, although later medical examination proved that Sylvia was not and could not have been. Sylvia was later accused of spreading rumors through Arsenal Technical High School that both Paula and Stephanie were prostitutes. This supposedly provoked Stephanie's boyfriend, Coy Hubbard, to physically attack Sylvia. Mrs. Vanasiewski encouraged Hubbard and other neighborhood children to torment Likens, quote, torment Likens, including, among other things, extinguishing cigarettes on her skin and forcing her to remove her clothes and insert a glass Coca-Cola bottle into her vagina on at least two occasions. After beating Sylvia to force her to confess to stealing a gym suit from school, which Vanasiewski would not buy for her, and without which she was unable to attend gym class, Vanasiewski kept her out of school and forbade her to leave the house. When Sylvia urinated in her bed, she was locked in the cellar and forbidden to use the toilet. Later, she was forced to consume her own feces and urine. Shortly before Sylvia died, Vanasiewski began to carve the words, quote, "I'm a prostitute and proud of it!" exclamation mark, into Sylvia's stomach with a heated needle, although Richard Hobbs finished the carving. Hobbs and 10-year-old Shirley Vanasiewski also used a heated eye bolt to burn the number 3 into Sylvia's chest. Sylvia attempted to escape a few days before her death after overhearing the plan to have her dumped in a wooded area nearby. But as she reached the front door, Vanasiewski caught her and punished her by tying her up in the basement and giving her only crackers to eat. On October 26, 1965, after multiple beatings, burnings, and scalding baths, Sylvia Marie Likens died of a brain hemorrhage, shock, and malnutrition. She was 16 years old. When Stephanie Vanasiewski and Richard Hobbs realized that Sylvia was not breathing, Stephanie attempted to give Sylvia a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation before realizing that it was hopeless and that Sylvia is dead. Finally, I'm going to close by saying, as I have been warned that I need to be extra careful not to be subjected to harmful ritual during my birthday this week, I have arranged to be at my mom's office with my mom and others who will be on extra alert until the date has successfully passed. Thank you for helping to keep a watch this month as I work to relocate. God bless you.
All right. Thank you so much, Sahara. You did a great job. We will talk to you soon. I got to bring in Roz because we're running out of time. Roz, are you there?
I'm here, and I am so excited. I'm praising the Lord that you are back. And we're thanking everybody for praying and standing with you and believing for God's grace. And each one of us has to stand up just like you, Reverend Pinckney, for what is right, or it's not going to turn. United together, no matter what our color is, helping one another from schools, jobs, in the courts, we must be together.
Absolutely, Roz.
Right, I'm so proud of you. You are a true American hero. It's just incredible. I want to talk about the fact that this week we had the primary here in California. We're only about 18% of the voters that could vote voted. We have a population that doesn't vote, doesn't care, and we have a Governor Brown, State Senator Padilla, State Senator Pavley, Assemblyman, which is mine, Dubochnik. It's in a school district, Los Angeles Unified School District, that it's okay to kill off injured workers and injured teachers. More and more I'm hearing from people that have been injured, and they are going through the same thing with doctors, lawyers, and judges writing phony medical reports and admitting it, lawyers lying and delaying cases, and deals with judges. We must stand up. We must vote. The teachers, there's about 31,000 LAUSD teachers. They bring in about $49 million in dues. Most of the, about a third of the money, I think, goes into the coffers of Democratic candidates. The state of California is run by Democrats. The teachers do not get a raise. They're in unsafe schools. They're in teacher jails where their rights are being denied. And if they're older, they're in there on trumped-up charges. We have injured teachers that they cannot call the paramedics on. They cannot call hazmat. We have a teacher, a black teacher, Charles Smith, that died. A human being that the school district purposely killed off to save money while they bought a very expensive accounting system for the payroll that still doesn't work years later, $500 million school with talking benches, iPads, and they're saving money killing teachers. I find it unconscionable, whether white, black, Latino teachers, it's unconscionable. And if you're older, you are a target for them. I find it unconscionable that we have Governor Brown, a Democrat, running the state who cannot pick up the telephone to stop this. So our vote, our voices, we need to have changed it here in California to Republicans and hold them accountable. And if they can't do what they're supposed to do, we need to recall them. And this is so important wherever you're living. I applaud all the heroes that stand up, that speak up. It is so peaceful in your heart doing the right thing, God's right thing. And I thank everybody for everything that they're doing, but I need your help. It's RozyWow@AOL.com, RozyWow, R-O-Z-Y-W-O-W, @AOL.com, and my number, 818-631-0513, 818-631-0513. 0513. You know I broke my knee. It still hurts. By the grace of God, it's getting better. But each one of us, wherever we are in our life, need to unite together to stand up. We need to become a Reverend Pinckney. We can't stop until we're free because they're here. It's not that they're coming. They're here. They're dumbing down our children's education. They're getting rid of the kids that aren't so smart. They're letting them go into the jails, which is another billion-dollar business, as they dummy down the students. We must stand up. Having the students learning, being productive citizens, is a blessing for all of us. My judge, Judge Gerald Cohn, diminished capabilities, lawyer Frank Christine, lying and delaying my case, Dr. John Stahlberg, $16,770 for a bogus medical report that he admits that now I have that on my records, a psychiatric diagnosis, as I was sprayed in my face with toxic chemicals. We must stand up together, and more of us are suffering in this. And we must become voters, all of us voting, not just because you're a Democrat, and keep it up, because you're not getting raises. You're getting killed off in your jobs and in the schools. Your children are not getting the proper education, so we must speak up. Thank
right
you.
On. Rozzy, we just about run out of time. Hey, I really appreciate you. You know I love you. And I just want to give Monica Patrick Lewis the last word, because she did a tremendous job. And those of you out there, I want you to give her a tremendous hand. I love her. Her work is just about beyond recognition. She's not only is she's an educator, she's well educated, and she's just a tremendous person. If you ever met her, you would have to love her. There's no way you could not love this woman. She's just a tremendous person, and my heart goes out to her. My wife's heart goes out to her. We just love her so much. But Monica, you got the last word to say. You take as much time as you want and just say whatever your heart desires.
Well, I just definitely want to give homage to Queen Mother Yuri Yokoshima. With her passing this past week, it was another loss of an ancestor, of a hero here. She was a supporter of Malcolm. She was a Japanese-American who had been a major force in terms of that community supporting the civil rights movement. And so and the liberation of this human being, period. And so I just want to pay homage to her. But I'm so excited, Reverend Pinkney, about you and your leadership, and definitely appreciate all that you do. Thank you, thank you, thank you for the opportunity to just be able to do anything to support you and just the great effort that you have there in Benton Harbor, and really as a national leader for our struggle and our fight for freedom and justice.
And Monica, I am definitely, you know, you and I are going to be talking about your own show. And I love to have you on every Sunday with me, because it's an honor and a privilege. And much love for you, Monica, and the work that you do. You know, when you say something, you do it. And that's the difference between most people that's around now. When we say something, they really don't do it. But you do what you say you're going to do, and I'm so proud of you. I'm just proud to know you. I'm just happy. And you got 10 seconds to say whatever you want, and then we got to hear Wake Up Everybody. Go ahead.
Well, I just love you, and I think love is the answer for what's going to rebuild us. I definitely know that when we fight, we win.
That's
when
right.
Yes, sir.
That's right. When we fight, we win. On that note, let's listen to a little Wake Up Everybody.
We're just
Fight back.